Receiving this message. We are Ken Jennings and John Roderick. We speak to you from our present, which we can only assume is your distant past, the turbulent time that was the early 21st century.
Fearing the great cataclysm that will surely befall our civilization, we began this monumental reference of strange and obscure human knowledge. These recordings represent our attempt to compile and preserve wonders and esoterica that would otherwise be lost.
So whether you're listening from an advanced civilization or have just reinvented the technology to decrypt our transmissions, this is our legacy to you.
This is our time capsule. This is the Omnibus. You have accessed entry 446.IS4804, certificate number 22352. Eyebrows.
I love your eyebrows. We'll call them Frida and Kahlo. If Brooke Shields married the Groucho Marx, that child would have your eyebrows.
I mean, obviously, I'm spectacularly ill-equipped to be an authority on this subject.
You and me both.
I don't know if anyone should listen to what I have to... Or maybe that's not true.
Well, I don't know anything about whiskey, and neither do you, but it didn't keep us from doing an hour and a half on it.
A universally acclaimed 90 minutes of hardcore, deeply researched whiskey content.
But we've gone on record many times, and it's part of, I think, our collective identity as the hosts of Omnibus, that we have... coloration, which is to say our pigmentation of both our skin and our hair,
or lack thereof,
it can be best described as no color,
non-color.
Really. It's just sort of a kind of gray.
When you close your eyes,
pink and gray,
that weird beigey color you see,
but it's a gray pink.
I'm that all the time.
That's what's sad, is it's not even a rosy pink. It's just sort of a dead.
Do you think the first guys to see like the alien grays were just actually seeing some very pale, just some white person?
Just some Welsh.
Just some Welsh guy whose hair is the same color as his skin, exactly.
I'm starting to go gray, and it, if anything, is giving me a little bit more color because I've gone from the color of wet sand to the color of sand that's between the wet and dry zone on the beach. So it's like... It's a little... So
in this analogy, death is perfectly dry sand. Like, that's where...
Yeah, death is... Or, you know, dry sand is what I'm headed toward.
Your desiccated corpse will someday...
I used to be wet sand.
But that'll be a good look, is what you're saying. You're going to look... You're going to leave a beautiful corpse then.
Oh, inshallah.
Open casket, please. You're going to be a distinguished silver fox.
The problem, though, that we're experiencing right now is neither of us have eyebrows that you could see if you were standing further than 5 feet from us.
Right.
And eyebrows are a main way... that a face shows expression, that a face distinguishes itself.
Pliny said the soul lived in the eyebrows.
Yeah, see.
And that's why.
Yeah.
Because it's such a...
So much going on. But there's nothing going on in our eyebrow. And now I have a mustache.
Or do you? Like, from 5 feet away, you don't.
It's enormous, right? I mean...
You got out of your car, and I was one car length behind you, and I was like, does he have a mustache or a beard? Neither?
And yet, when you get up close, it's like, oh my God, it's a woolly sweater. It's just exactly the same color as the rest of it.
I said to the technician, can you clean that up a little? And your face went, boop, 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 boop. And then I could see you had a mustache and stubble now.
Enormous mustache, though. It's, you know, I grow like it all the way out, just trying to make it visible. It's so frustrating.
And I'm actually jealous when I see, you know, a great set of eyebrows.
Yeah, me too.
You know, like Peter Gallagher, you could see his eyebrows on Google Earth probably.
Well,
and Kardashian eyebrows.
You know, women are always saying to me like, oh, my eyebrows, like they're so big. And I'm like, they're wonderful. Like I envy your eyebrows so much. Why would you do anything to them except let them flourish?
Your forehead is a wonderland.
Yeah, let them go. And they're like, oh, I have to do all this work on my eyebrows.
Eyebrows are work. The, you know, our patriarchal, shameful patriarchal attitudes toward eyebrow care will be a part of this
Yours and mine?
Comprehensive.
All I want is larger eyebrows. Oh, there was a girl that used to go to Stellar High School in Anchorage, and she had platinum blonde hair, but big black eyebrows, dark eyebrows. I was so in love with her. I never could talk to her. She was too intimidating.
So the hair was not, it was the Madonna look, right? Leave the eyebrows?
Leave the eyebrows.
Leave the hair, leave the eyebrows.
Yeah, leave the cannoli.
They were big cannoli-sized eyebrows.
Such a
cool
look. You
can't say that about Madonna. That's a little racist.
That she had cannoli-sized eyebrows.
You can't compare Italian-American facial features to different shapes of pasta or pastry.
Hmm.
That's just a rule.
Is that like an omnibus rule, or is that like a global rule?
That's like Miss Manners. If you see Dean Martin wearing a bow tie, you can't be like, hey, nice farfalle. It's offensive.
Yeah, sure. Okay.
It'll start a do the right thing type pizza riot.
Right. Another pizza riot.
You don't want another
pizza riot. They happen all the time now.
I mean, that didn't happen to be, I mean, it just happened to be a pizza place.
Dean Martin's eyebrows were more rigatoni, right? You know, like squid ink rigatoni.
I was just thinking if he was actually wearing a bow tie.
Oh.
I was extending the rule to apply to clothes.
Dean Martin surely has many, many bow tie pictures.
He probably did. But you wouldn't compare them to Farfalle. That's an ethnic...
I wouldn't have.
It'd be a weird thing to think or say.
Until you put the thought in my head.
Also, my lifetime didn't overlap with Dean Martin's that much because he, you know, drank himself to death fairly young.
Not only is Dean Martin often in a tuxedo, but there's actually a brand of bow tie called the Dean Martin Black Linen Bow Tie.
Is it like at a jaunty angle?
No, it's just a regular like tie, a bow tie kind of tie, which surprisingly harder and harder to find. It's pre-tied. What kind of world are we living in?
Well, if you've had a few.
Had a few bow ties or had a few...
Had a few drinks.
Had a few gin martinis.
Like Dino at 11 a.m. Mm-hmm. You can't tie a bow tie before you head to the club.
It's the one thing you can do super drunk is tie a bow tie, if you're a man of distinction.
So he died when I was in college, but I was wrong. He was actually 78.
Yeah. Oh, he made it all the way.
All the way to 70? Is that what we mean by all the way?
I mean,
78 years old.
If somebody dies at 78, you think they made it.
Exactly.
Right?
But I didn't know that was... He made it all the way. What do you do when somebody dies at 79? He made it all the way and just kept going.
Good job. All the way plus one. Another infinity year. Plus one.
The reason why I was thinking about eyebrows this week is, have you ever, because eyebrows have a strong cultural component as well.
Oh yeah.
They vary in time and in space. Eyebrows are a four-dimensional solid.
Okay.
Like the Tesseract.
Okay.
Have you ever noticed, have you ever seen like a Japanese movie where there's unusual eyebrow care?
Oh, yeah. Like there's a lot going on.
To connote pre-modern Japan?
Yeah, big like eyebrows that are swept up on the ends and extremely, there's a lot of waggling, waggling.
Yeah, you got those male kind of enhanced kabuki eyebrows. I think those might be borrowed from the Chinese.
I'm almost certain. Just like Japanese gardens were borrowed from the Chinese.
There's a
and the kanji alphabet.
I was
let's see what
are you,
else.
Are you saying the eyebrows are based on the kanji alphabet? Can you spell things with your if you've got big?
I bet you could. I was looking into Sanskrit, how they the Sanskrit alphabet, which is used.
You're looking into it.
I was looking into it.
I was thinking of buying a Sanskrit.
You know, I had a broker. lots going on with the Sanskrit alphabet. It's used a lot in different ways besides just writing Sanskrit.
What else would you do with it?
Write other languages.
But with a weird alphabet?
Not weird.
With a different alphabet. I found this chart of Chinese eyebrow styles kind of connected to different historical periods. And it's a journey. It looks like you're choosing weird eyebrows in... you know, kind of a funny police lineup game or one of those little toys where you can draw in magnetic filings, draw weird eyebrows.
Yes.
Like they almost look like comic mustaches. They're so crazy. Everything from blobs to parabolae to big swirly ski jumps.
Like the language used by the squid aliens in...
Exactly.
In the one movie.
Also a four-dimensional construct.
Yeah.
The ones you're kind of the long angled ones that you're kind of thinking of, you know, slightly Star Trek-y in appearance, those were prized in China because they resembled the little tendrils or whatever you call them on the bottom of moth wings.
Oh,
do you know what I'm talking about? On swallowtail moths. So those were called like the immortal moth. And it was a really, it was a sexy look.
It requires that you shave up on the ends of where a normal eyebrow would be, right? It's kind of like a handlebar mustache.
And maybe beyond. A lot of these look drawn on. And that's what I noticed about these Japanese ones. When you watch a Japanese movie set in feudal times or even older, because I think this goes back to the Heian period, you're likely to see a look where the eyebrow, the woman with the owner of the eyebrows has no evident eyebrows where eyebrows should be.
Yeah.
And then high up on the forehead, like pretty close to the hairline, a kind of a blotch or a smudge, which...
Oh, yeah, okay.
Can you picture this?
Yeah, I can. Like I thought you were talking about Chola eyebrows that don't resemble any kind of eyebrow either.
We'll get into those as well. No, but these are... So it's the same thing. They've been plucked and redrawn, but instead of a very kind of finely stenciled line, it's kind of a quantum cloud of eyebrowness.
Sure. It's just a suggestion of an eyebrow that's not where an eyebrow would be.
Like you'll see this in Kurosawa samurai movies or I've been watching a lot of Japanese golden age movies recently because I discovered that the Criterion streaming service has a lot of the works of Mikio Naruse, a Japanese director who, you know, at the time was considered the equal of Ozu or Mizoguchi or anybody, but whose work has like never been available in the West on home video.
Uh-huh.
What percentage of listeners do you think are super into obscure Japanese directors of the 50s?
Probably a surprisingly
Do you think it's like 100?
Large number.
Probably like 100%, right?
I'm not sure about 100%, but I think of the subcultures that exist within the futurelings, super fans of Japanese cinema, probably not the smallest.
If you like Yasujirō Ozu and his fables about changing mores and family life in 1950s Tokyo, let me commend to you the little-known work of Mikio Naruse. But if you watch historical Japanese movies, the women will often have these kind of misplaced eyebrows. And I think in Spirited Away, have you seen the Ghibli movie Spirited Away? Like the bathhouse workers also have no eyebrows where they should be, but they've kind of got these black ellipses drawn up towards their hairline. Right. This is called Hikimayu. It's I finally had seen it enough movies to think, look, I'm going to get to the bottom of this. Why is this retelling of Macbeth have smudged eyebrow ladies? Why is Lady Macbeth's eyebrows way up there? Historians are not sure, what the aesthetic reasoning is, because it looks a little bit odd. You know, today when you see like a very thin, exaggerated eyebrow from a different historical period, you think, oh, I can see what they're going for. That's like an idealized eyebrow. But this just kind of looks completely alien to us. It may be because it was stylish to wear a lot of white powder on your face at the time. And so if you're going to powder up your face, if you're redrawing your eyebrows, you know, a single kind of blot is easier than a look that could turn asymmetrical or could go wrong.
I mean, it's certainly no weirder than the Elizabethan, like, shave your hairline back to a straight line between your ears.
So that's kind of the opposite of this. I mean, there's, let's start going through time. Let's start marching chronologically through.
I love it when we go through time.
Sherman set the Wayback Machine for the Neanderthal period. I mean, it's often said that, you know, you could see a Neanderthal in the New York subway system, and, you know, many of us probably have.
Been one.
And if they were just, you are the Neanderthal in this scenario. And if you were to pull your Mets hat down over the top of your head, nobody would know, because the main physiological difference is that flat head, where Neanderthals are just not thinking about Japanese film of the 1950s, all the higher functioning that you and I have available.
Right.
And then they've got that big brow ridge right above the eyes.
Right. Where they're thinking about the things they see.
They're thinking about nothing in there. That's just bone.
Oh, was it all bone? It wasn't like prefrontal cortex?
Some amazing weird part of the brain that sticks out like the brim of a cap.
Sonar.
Yeah, that's how the Neanderthals echolocated. Ding. It's amazing they died out because they were really good at not running into trees in the dark. I guess the scientific point of view on that brow ridge, which really is just
bone,
a stripe of bone, is that it must have been structural. Like, we ate tougher foods back then.
So we had to soften it up by banging our heads on it.
Stick them in your eyes. I think the idea is that the chewing required to eat, you know, raw meat and gristle off the bone
needed a counterbalance.
Yeah, it needed needed trusses elsewhere in the head.
Oh,
and on the face of it, this sounds ridiculous. Let's be honest, because I'm about to discredit this theory.
On the face of it,
slightly above the face of it, or just maybe. You know, there's a gap there between the optic stuff, you know, the eye cavity and the smaller, flatter brain. And so, you know, nature just filled it up with bone. But in 2018, some scientists
That's how nature works.
Nature abhors a vacuum.
That's exactly it.
But it loves putting a bone in a vacuum. Nature's a perv. In 2018, some scientists actually ran computer models on Neanderthal skulls. They took out the brow ridge and put it through their paces, and they're like, nope, the skull is perfectly fine without this brow ridge. There's no structural purpose we can see.
Thank goodness for science.
Thank goodness for 3D computer rendering of Neanderthal skulls.
How would we have been able to continue to advance?
Oh, you said never computer. Never say the C word.
Think about how life was before we knew that Neanderthal skull bones were not necessary, and then life after we knew that. I mean, it's a big difference.
Maybe it was freeing. You could just say whatever. You could be like, oh, it's for chewing. And people, and the students would be thinking, that makes no sense. Chewing happens like way south of there.
Yeah.
But they would just have to nod and be like, well,
that's how chewing works.
He is a leader in his field.
Think about how your forehead aches when you chew.
When I chew a lot of gum, I get a headache.
Yeah, but that's where your mandible hits your knee bone or whatever.
That's mandibular.
Mm-hmm.
So these scientists concluded that it can't have anything to do with the structural integrity of the skull, that early hominids actually had a big brow ridge for the same reason that...
Because it was sexy?
Basically.
Whoa!
For the same reason that stags have antlers.
Yeah.
It's signaling. It's like, I'm a male and I'm a dominant male.
Yeah.
Look how angry I look with my brow jutting out like this.
Do you think Neanderthals fought by banging their foreheads?
The way stags do?
Yeah.
Almost certainly.
They'd sit on the other side of the campfire from one another and run and like wham.
I want a retelling of Bambi where in the spring where he starts to get a little bit horny. You know the part of Bambi where he gets horny?
Oh yeah. That's
they say Twitter pated because in 1940 you couldn't just say Thumper is horned up.
That stuff's all been excised from the version of Bambi we watch around here.
You watch a version where
all the sex out.
Thumper and Flower don't get girlfriends?
No, they're not even in it.
That's probably true. Because, you know, the one thing about that movie is the skunk is almost certainly gay.
Yes.
And then he gets a girlfriend in Act 2 and you're like, come on.
It's a...
Flower, this forest is a safe space. You don't have to pretend. You can
call me Flower if you want to.
The young prince can call me Flower.
I feel like my lack of eyebrows is compensated for with a strong brow.
I thought you were going to say sensitive lyric writing.
Well, that too, but don't you feel like sure. I have a kind of, you know, if I were going to have to brow joust, I think I'd equip myself against all these like.
Do you have a sense that it's really thick?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think so. There's so many soft-browed people in this modern age.
I am always surprised when I bonk my head on something really hard and I'm like, wow, that worked. Like, that's the most important part of my body in there and it's fine. I'm still thinking things.
Uh-huh.
Like, good job, skull.
Nice work.
So the idea is this shows permanent dominance. You don't have to always be doing an angry expression if your brow comes pre-growly. Although there is some chicken and the egg problem where presumably we associate a growly expression with dominance because of alpha guys who had it. I don't know which direction that goes.
Right. I mean, if you think about an animal that does not have much of a brow, it's a chicken, but then...
That famous saying, if you think of an animal that doesn't have much of a brow, you know what? It's chicken.
Chicken. Right away.
Every time.
Although, you know, Sam the Eagle has maybe the biggest brow in all the Muppets.
Of all the birds, he has the most brow.
Yeah.
Right? In the bird kingdom?
Yeah, right.
More than an ostrich?
Eagle's got a big brow. Chicken's got a little brow. It continues the theme. Dominant predator has a large brow.
Chicken gets eaten because it can't look at you funny and scare you off.
I do like this idea of recasting like media properties instead of bringing Hamlet forward and making it into a hip hop opera
mm-hmm. or hip opera,
a hip opera. We take Bambi, but we relocate it to Neanderthal times, right? Like just start taking all of Broadway hits, but make them like prehistoric,
just a super modern movie, but like redo the French Connection. But it's set in Roman Empire
yeah,
times.
Right. Or earlier.
Or earlier.
Yeah.
Why not?
Sumeria.
Why not?
Sure.
I mean, that's what Kurosawa was onto when he was doing like Macbeth and Lear in feudal Japan, but it was more geographic.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
He wasn't like, let's put him in caves.
I don't want to do our elevator pitch here because somebody's going to steal it and take it to Hollywood. You know, you're in Hollywood now. We should go down there together and make this pitch to somebody at Sony.
Paddy Chayefsky's network. But instead of a TV station, it's set in a California Gold Rush newspaper office.
Okay. I like it.
imagine everybody opening up their Fresno Gazette and seeing, I want you to get up and go to your window.
How about the China Syndrome?
Set in medieval China. They're like, if this bonfire gets too big, it could sink all the way through to here. You know, we've alluded to the fact that the forehead really is one of the most expressive parts of the body.
Yeah.
And that's probably why the Neanderthal forehead went away and why they all died out. Because when I say we, I mean Homo habilis or whoever.
With the conquering race.
I really take a lot of pride. I mean, if people are going to say we to refer to their local football team.
Yeah, why not say we all of Homo sapiens.
Good job, Homo erectus. Way to take out the Neanderthals.
So they had their large brows were not expressive enough?
Yeah, I mean, if you've got a big wedge of bone there, you can't express surprise and you know, the millions of things we can express with our eyebrows, many of which are very deep rooted. Like it's almost a reflex that when you recognize somebody at a distance, to this day you will do an involuntary thing with your eyebrows. And that's evolutionary biology. You know, that was a way to signal friendliness to somebody when you saw somebody from your tribe or pack at a distance.
Open your eyes a little bit or raise your eyebrows.
Yeah, like here's the most visible part of your body. And, yeah. You know, there's got to be hair there or else eyebrow wrinkles are not apparent at a distance, especially on faces like yours and mine.
But, you know, I have heavily lidded eyes. So when I do open them, it is like... Whoa,
you feel
happens?
Like you could do it even without.
Well, I have to because I don't have them, and people do. Wait a minute. Do people not recognize my emotional state? Not because I'm cryptic, but because I just don't have any of the
I thought I was a repressed white man, but it might just be my eyebrows.
What if I'm making facial expressions that would be totally identifiable on Groucho Marx?
Take a Sharpie and do some experimenting.
I did that. I took some electrical tape once and put eyebrows on. And walked around the house for a day, like kind of making expressions with my eyebrows to see, but exaggerated eyebrows don't work if the rest of your face is the color of wet sand.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the fact that we have hair up there.
Who does?
The fact that we.
You and I? Barely.
We do. It's just the wrong color. And I hardly have any.
I don't know. You don't have any. Barely any.
I look like, I think I've said Richard Gephardt on the show before because that's a reference the kids love. My eyebrow look is a young kid who turns out to be a Nazi in Cabaret.
Yeah,
like,
I mean,
it's too blonde.
If a 13-year-old had your eyebrow as a mustache, he would feel ashamed.
He would be mercilessly picked on in gym class. So like the fact that there's hair up there does have some other purposes. I mean, it catches sweat rolling down your forehead and again, you and I don't have as much of this as Brooke Shields, but,
right.
But you know, the idea is it evolved maybe to protect the eyes from some of the gunk that might fall into it.
Oh, I see.
But I think the scientific consensus now is it's mostly just for signaling. Like, I'm going to look mean to this member of a different tribe. Oh, here's the nice tribe that found the monolith with me. I'm going to do the nice thing and look sympathetic with my eyebrows.
Did you teach your children well?
Their parents' hell will slowly go by. Why don't I know the words to this song? Know.
Seems like we should.
Maybe if we were singing in like four-part harmony, we would know.
Did you ever give your kids eyebrow advice in terms of how to use their eyebrows? They both have eyebrows because your wife has eyebrows.
Yes. Luckily, my brunette wife means my kids both have, even though they're blondish,
yeah,
they have better eyebrows than I do, which is not hard.
So did you ever give them eyebrow coaching?
That is not a thing.
Well, because I have coached my daughter on...
How was she misusing her eyebrows?
Oh, no, she wasn't. Oh. I just sat with her one day and said, let me show you some things you can do with your eyes that communicate like mutually understandable things that are not spoken. And she was like, okay, go ahead. And I said, what is this? You know, it was like one of those flashcard things, like, what is this emotion?
Except you're not testing to see if she's a neurotypical.
I was just like...
You're just trying to broaden her repertoire.
Yeah, like, check this out. And she was like, oh. And I said, right, so if I said something that you thought was dumb, what would you do with your eyebrows? And she kind of waggled them, and I was like, well, what if you did this? And I, you know, did the quizzical one eye, slight eyebrow up.
You can cock an eyebrow, right?
Oh, yeah.
See, I
use it a lot.
I can't do it.
And then there are so many ways to cock an eyebrow. You can kind of go, and you can go, and you, I mean, there's a lot you, I probably have 14 different ways to raise one eyebrow.
I wonder if my problem is not, I wonder if I had better eyebrows if I could do it. Like, I wonder if it's not a musculature issue. It's just that you can't see anything I try to do.
I mean.
I was jealous of it as a kid because you could see Mr. Spock do it.
Yes.
To great effect.
Yes.
And you'd be like, that guy, you know, that was a funnier button on the scene than any racist thing Dr. McCoy could have said, you know? And all he had to do was raise an eyebrow. And I could not do it. I watched myself in the mirror and I couldn't do it. And, you know, just the other night I was watching myself on Jeopardy, and I was doing an intro where I was trying to do a very kind of serious look. Mm-hmm. And because I can't do the kind of one eyebrow thing, it did not come off as arch or quizzical at all. It just looked like I was like maybe slightly in pain or smelled something weird. And I was like, I got to remember not to do that face because my eyebrows are not doing what they would do in my head.
Yeah, I think I have enough of a brow that I pull off the I pull off the raised eyebrow thing just because it contorts my face.
Yeah,
I have
good.
A lot of lines on my forehead.
That's good.
Jack McBriar, who plays Kenneth Parcell on 30 Rock, he has a very expressive set of, he probably can do 40 different emotions just by raising his eyebrow and kind of manipulating his forehead. But I think his eyebrows are drawn on. I mean, you know, like painted, because he's very blonde.
You're right.
And I think that They put mascara in.
Mine do on Jeopardy.
They draw your eyebrows on?
A little bit. I mean, they kind of fill it in a little.
That's cool.
I don't know.
I always wondered, you know, back in the 90s when everybody was exploring different, like, oh, maybe I'll paint my fingernails. Maybe I'll get an ear stud. Maybe I'll put a ring in my eyebrow.
By the way, that time did not end. Oh, you just got old.
Yeah, maybe. But yeah, it just got weird.
It started in the 90s.
But I thought for a while, like, what would be wrong with me just using some eyebrow makeup? You know, everybody, like millions and millions of people paint their eyebrows. Why not me? But I think it was that I would go to the beauty aisle and I couldn't choose.
You'd have to gradually phase it in also.
Yeah.
You don't want people to suddenly see you with fake eyebrows.
Well, you go on vacation and you come back and everybody's like, wow, you look so tan. And then you got a new eyebrow thing that you're doing.
Oh, yeah. You just make sure you leave town for a week.
Yeah. And then you keep doing it and people just accept it's the new you.
Ed Begley had, Ed Begley's character on Arrested Development had alopecia. And he had these big eyebrows. Also true of Mike Nichols, by the way. I didn't know this till I read the Mark Harris book. Mike Nichols had a childhood cancer scare that meant he could never grow hair. So he was always wearing fake eyebrows his entire life. But the comic thing on Arrested Development is the guy's eyebrows are always just askew or going missing or moving around his face in upsetting ways. So there's a lot of risk. There's a lot of downside to eyebrow reinforcement.
Well, the Joe Pesci character in JFK.
Right.
What was that guy's name? The Kennedy conspirator?
It's not Clay Shaw. That's Tommy Lee Jones. The other guy is it an Italian name?
Yeah, I feel like it. Oh, David Ferry.
Ferry.
Yeah.
It's a lot of names. But he had weird eyebrows.
He also had a kind of alopecia, and he wears a wig and fake eyebrows through the whole movie.
You never think about that. Like, you know, having to put on a wig every day, hassle. But think about having to fix eyebrows. Like, every time Mike Nichols goes out to Sardi's,
he's got to put his eyebrows on.
He's got to put, like, gum resin on his face.
I feel like it's one of the gendered, like concepts that you know, two guys sitting and going like, can you imagine having to glue your eyebrows to your face? And all of
every woman listening,
yeah, every woman listening is like, come on,
listen,
are you kidding me?
Yeah. There's a lot of, the historical trends in eyebrows really are not as easy on women as men, in patriarchal societies.
Cause we only think of our eyebrows in every once in a while when we realize nobody knows what our emotions are. But
is that why men are emotionally repressed?
Maybe.
Because we don't have good eyebrow care?
But I mean, every woman in my family, I have heard about their eyebrows many, many times over the years. Every woman I've ever dated, I know more about their eyebrows than they know about me.
Any part of you?
My whole personality.
anything in your biography? The interesting thing about the human forehead to be evolving flatter so that it basically becomes...
A billboard.
Yeah, it's a billboard. Like, imagine, you know, we Neanderthals were a little razor phone, a little flip phone with a little screen. And then as it sort of evolved away, we became smartphone forehead people with much better, with high def screens, with, what do they call that? What did Apple call that? Retina or cornea? What do they call their
retinals? 4K.
Not the scanning thing, but whatever their higher resolution screen was. And this is the same kind of process that you see in other species, interestingly, when you domesticate them. When you turn a European muskox into a Hereford cow, or when you turn a wolf into a dog, not with a witch's spell, but with
when you say you don't mean me.
Yeah, when you do this, is this not something you wanted to try?
I don't know. I have never thought about turning a muskox into a Hereford cow.
Get a muskox on the internet and get to work. You know, you what happens is their appearance gets friendlier to the. To the appearance of other mammals, you know, like dogs have flatter faces. Wolves have kind of that long, aggressive muzzle.
Yeah.
Dogs will often have flatter, cuter faces, bigger, waggier tails and floppy ears.
So you're not saying that these traits are bred into them because humans think this is pretty. You're saying that by virtue of hanging around with humans, this is like a global signifier of friendliness.
As you make them smarter and better companions, their appearance gets friendlier to other mammals.
Oh.
Because the same signs that we're taught that our brains tell us to interpret as friendliness go hand in hand with, you know, reliable companion, good goat herder.
Yeah.
Comes when I call. And that's the same thing that's happening to people. Like, we're basically self-domesticating ourselves from our hominid ancestors. As our faces get bigger and bigger and goofier and woo.
So our lack of eyebrows maybe is a signifier that we would be great goat herders and are fine companions.
We're more friendly than people with mean eyebrows.
Yeah.
They're evolutionary throwbacks. We're like almost to the ladies in the tank in Minority Report.
Yeah.
You know, just big, doughy, hairless blobs.
Yeah. When I look at your face, my first thought is, I bet he knows how to use Excel.
When I look at your face, I'm like, are my eyes actually focused? No, wait, they are. So as you move forward in human history, now that we have this broad canvas above our eyes for nature to paint on, societies very quickly start giving nature a hand there.
Right.
In ancient Egypt, for example, you know, they had a super famous eye look that people
still
replicate today. Like, a very elaborate, you know, they would use kohl, K-O-H-L, which I didn't know this, not related to coal or charcoal. It's not carbon-based at all.
Is it etymologically related?
It must be.
Yeah.
It's But the mineral that coal is ground from is actually stibnite, which you've probably seen if you've ever like looked at weird crystals or rocks in a mineral collection at a museum.
That's an Amish tradition, right? Stibnite?
Stibnite. We're part of the Stibnite synod of Lutheranism.
So yeah, right. Okay, so it is a ground mineral.
But it's like this kind of gray, cool, crystal-looking thing.
Right. That appears in Egypt, must be.
Yeah, and stibnite, in fact, is mostly antimony, which is why, to this day, our periodic abbreviation for antimony is SB, because, you know, the Latin root was stibnium. And it actually looks like, I wonder if our word for coal comes from, you know, Central Asian words for, or, you know, Middle Eastern words for, no, it appears to be parallel. The root for coal appears to be burn or to shine or to glow, you know, because you light them.
From an Anglo-Saxon, a German?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And eventually, you know, you finally get back to Persian and Sanskrit. But I'm not sure if that's related to coal, which actually comes from the same Arabic root where we get alcohol. It's the al prefix on coal. Anyway, so they would grind that up and put it, you know, Cleopatra on her eyes and...
But you're saying this goes back to 3000 BC.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Cleopatra would be extremely late, but this is thousands of years old. And we have a story, you know, and the reason why the Egyptians put the stuff on their eyes, it was thought to be medicinal. It was thought that you wouldn't get eye...
Please.
Yeah, you wouldn't get eye, you know, with styes or whatever if you had this stuff on your eyes. And of course... The same reason football players wear it, to keep the harsh Egyptian sun from reflecting on you.
And this was men and women using coal?
Yes, but mostly women. I think in most of these historical cases, yes, we see artistic suggestions that men did it too, but most of the eyebrow fashions were women. And, you know, it's a relic of a time when women were seen as decorative and men were seen as functional.
But all of the like Tutankhamun stuff, I mean, the magic eye, well, how is this related to the evil eye too?
Like putting curses on people?
Well, you know, I think in ancient times, like the like all those pharaonic eye emblems.
Yeah, the eye was the symbol of Horus. So you're also suggesting the lineage between the pharaoh and the gods when you give prominent eye imagery on their, you know, whether it's their sarcophagi or on their actual eyes.
Right.
When you see coal mentioned in other ancient sources, like in the Bible, coal comes up, but it's always associated with like loose women.
Okay.
You know, like Isaiah or Ezekiel will be like, oh, Jerusalem, you've run after strange gods. And then immediately they're always like, just like a loose woman who would wear blackened eyes to seduce her targets or whatever, you know. So very, very early on, we see this idea that, you know, eyebrow fashion is important, but also
look out.
What kind of woman would actually care that much? You know what I mean?
So far. Why is it seductive? It universally is. What is it about blackening the eye that is?
I mean, the real question is it how much is cultural, how much is innate?
Well, but
it seems to be almost universal.
Yeah, and I think it would, you know, a lot of makeup.
Makeup always adds contrast, right?
Well, and it imitates youth, right? Rosy cheeks, but you don't think of children as having, they do have big eyelashes, but they don't have sunken eyes.
I was just watching this Chuck Jones book. I don't know if you ever noticed this, but Chuck Jones always puts like little eyelashes on his cute characters. He gives them chipmunk cheeks,
of course.
Little one line of, and this, it's a Bugs Bunny cartoon where he remembers being a kid and suddenly you see Bugs and Elmer and they've got little eyelashes. And I wonder if that's what it is. It's the rosy cheeks of youth.
Yeah, it's the joke of Nermal, the world's cutest kitten.
Exactly. Nermal's got big eyelashes, too.
But so I think just like flat faces on dogs make them sexier, there's something universal about dark around the eyes that is seductive.
It seems to be in so many cultures. But then weird that it's not, weird that less so in men, right?
Right. So what is it about it?
I mean,
what does it communicate?
That could just be the layering over of men have all the power and don't have to do this. You know, like men can dictate what they like to see, and women do not get to dictate what's easy to, or convenient to wear. You know, so the power imbalance reflects in.
Well, and you, but you would think if black around the eyes communicated ferocity, men would wear it.
Yeah.
And it, so it doesn't, it communicates.
Instead, we know that blue around the eyes, like in Braveheart, communicates yes. ferocity.
Yes. But even Pris in Blade Runner, even though that is a completely inartful
eye look.
Yeah, but it's still, we read it as feminine and sexy, even though it's extraordinary, or, you know, it's extreme.
I wonder if that's just the, if a beautiful woman does anything, it's a good look.
Well,
you know, like Daryl Hannah could get away with like a variety of crazy makeup looks that, that you or I and our normal looking friends of both genders could not get away with.
Well, although I've gone to a lot of Halloween parties with girls dressed as Pris. Mm-hmm. And it is a universal look.
It makes everyone look good.
It looks good on anybody. I mean, maybe you have to be wearing a blonde shock wig.
It doesn't make them all look like early Peter Gabriel.
No, but he's an example of a very sexy.
There's a tradition, there's a legend at least, that the ancient Egyptians used to shave their eyebrows in mourning. Like if a beloved family cat died, the way to signal your public grief would be to shave your eyebrows. But this only comes to us from Herodotus, who was sitting in Greece. And a lot of Herodotus, if you've ever read it, is more like, man, these other cultures be crazy. Like in the Sahara, they got ants bigger than foxes. Yeah. And they'll like dig burrows and you'll fall in.
He was the original Gonzo journalist.
Yeah, exactly. And he wouldn't even go to Vegas. He would just be like, yeah, in Persia, there's no doctors. If you're sick, you just sit in the street, and everybody who walks by is legally required to yell a diagnosis. Like, this is literally the kind of stuff that
I heard. Macedonia.
My friend's sister's cousins are going, was it 31 flavors with, you know, China around the same time has these very elaborate styles, this kind of diversity of, you know, like it almost looks like you'd go into a barber and point at one of these and be like, give me this weird set of lines, blotches, swirls, almost calligraphic. I mean, maybe that goes with that kind of ink brush aesthetic that the West did not have until we saw it in Asia. There was another look that noble women in the Tang period would have called Qing Dai, which was like bright blue green coloration in the eyebrows.
Oh yeah.
Which we don't actually see much of. Like, the ancient Egyptians would put bright, non-organic looking, non-carbon based life looking colors on their eyelids.
Oh, well, so did women in the 80s and 90s. I mean, think about the crazy eyeshadow that was popular when we were kids.
But not eyebrow pencil so much, right? Like,
in color, you mean?
Right, yeah, in weird colors.
No, somehow putting like turquoise eyeshadow looked natural, whereas turquoise eyebrows, I know, right? Would have been really weird.
It just shows how much of this is cultural. Like, we think, there's something innately normal about this shape of eyebrows, but these Japanese smudges are crazy. But to a Japanese woman of the Heian period, it would be the other way around. It would be like, this looks good and normal. Like, I'm on the cover of Marie Claire right now.
I don't know. Some makeup clearly is trying to imitate or duplicate something natural in the eye, right? Eyeshadow is meant to make blue eyeshadow is meant to make the skin of your eye lid look thin.
Is that right?
Yeah, like the blood vessels would be visible, and so a blue...
Are people with blue eyes supposed to do it, or are people with blue eyes not supposed to do it?
Like, I don't know.
Does it accentuate the weird blue eye mutation?
I know enough makeup artists that there should be a phone here, and we should just call them up and say, what are you going for,
bro? Did you know Mindy's degree is in theater makeup?
No.
I guess it wouldn't have killed me to, like, ask her some of these questions.
Yeah.
Instead, we will never know.
You have an expert... on hand, and in-house.
Instead, I just looked at like Wikipedia and MarieClaire.com.
Laying next to her in
for
bed.
For 45 minutes.
You're like, wow, look at all this weird theater makeup. I wonder where this comes from.
Well, you know, speaking of theater makeup, I wonder if a lot of the impact that makeup is supposed to have is similar to what theater makeup does, where at a bigger distance and in a broad variety of light conditions, the face still looks like a face.
Right.
Because that's what you're doing when you redden your lips and you are, you know, you emphasize cheekbones and you reinforce eyelashes and eyebrows. You're really kind of telegraphing what the face does, but at a distance.
Yeah.
You know, right. So across a room, it might be like, oh, she has the,
look at that.
She has the showy features that I would enjoy up close, you know? So it expands the diameter of your, appearance bewitching powers.
And when you think about the different skin tones of people from around the world,
right.
There are a lot of differences in color and makeup and the tones, skin tones, but also there are similarities in what they're going for, right? The accentuation of the eyes, the drama of the face, the youth, like, you know, black skin tone is going to use different makeup to communicate that youth, gold and pink, but like the idea of makeup is the same. There's no, I mean, other than like ancient practice, right? Everything kind of settled down into a, here's what we're going for.
Yeah.
Kind of vibe. Even now in alternative, my friend Christine, who does makeup in New York City, she does these incredible faces for magazines that are kind of nuts, like art, over into the realm of art.
Kevin O'Quan kind of stuff, yeah. Right?
But still, yeah, I guess at their extreme, they're kind of obscuring the features. But that feels like very, very, very modern.
Still avant-garde. And that's avant-garde, what, you know, Pris is in the future, right? Like,
right.
Like that conveys something that makeup has not tried yet on our earth. You've probably heard the thing about how people of color have a hard time in show business because there's very specialized hair and makeup knowledge. And, you know, talking to the very good hair and makeup people who work on Jeopardy, both of them have long careers in TV, and they're all comfortable with and knowledgeable with, you know, a full spectrum of skin tones. But they are used in their industry to, you know, black performers being like, I don't trust this white lady, you know?
Yeah,
cause,
sure.
Because, you know, it's a very different skill set, you know?
Well, everything in film and cinematography, it's a whole different, you really need a professional.
Right. Well, and the fact that a lot of those conventions evolved around white stars, whether that's lighting or makeup. And I think it's been like kind of shockingly and appallingly recently that...
I still see movies that are made even now where it's like, did you not know you had a black actor on your... in your cast?
Yeah.
Like, give me a break. My friend is, her name is Christine Sherbert. Her name is Christine Cherbonnier, and she works in New York and does, and I highly recommend.
Is this a plug?
I highly recommend everybody look at her work. Yeah. She's Yoko Ono's makeup artist.
Oh yeah. You told me this.
I tell, but she's a,
that's a pretty good story.
Good friend. Yeah. And her Instagram is awesome.
Speaking of people of color, if you move in ancient times over to Persia and India, you actually get the earliest known centuries ago, you get the earliest known examples of threading eyebrows.
Now I'm really curious because I have asked so many people, what is threading? And I get all these elaborate explanations that end up being like,
John, let me mansplain threading to you.
Yeah, okay.
Like, why are you pretending to care about
so
this?
So there's I'm very curious. So they use like some dental floss and they wrap it around the hair and pull it out?
Essentially, you got a piece of cotton thread, like a piece of dental floss that's wound back on itself. And if you can imagine that being coiled at both ends,
okay.
you'd have a windy kind of helix of thread.
I do this wrapped with every piece itself. Of dental floss.
Okay. Then you're ahead of the game here.
Okay.
You are ready to thread. You just don't have the eyebrows for it. And if you watch a video of it, it's miraculous because by kind of coiling and uncoiling this thread slightly at the hairline you're trying to contour.
Yeah.
Hairs just disappear. Bloop, plucked out.
What?
By the follicle. And I watched this, a super slow motion, because I was like, I have got to get to the bottom of this. What is even happening here? And if you watch a super slow motion, you can see what's happening is that as the tension in the double coil kind of winds and unwinds, as it moves, the little tiny hairs get wrapped around it. And by putting more tension on the coil, they just get popped out. And unlike tweezing, which is a hair at a time and requires... you know, which you can't do to a little tiny hair. You've got to wait till the hair is long enough. Threading will make a super bold contour because you can do a whole line at once. You know, you can line the thread and do a whole row of hairs. It's super good at grabbing, you know, even little tiny baby hairs will get caught in the thread. And apparently it's often said to be less painful than options like tweezing and laser and so forth.
So this has been happening all around me my whole life, and I just had no idea what was going
Probably
on.
Probably more so now. I feel like it's
more recent.
Yeah, it's kind of caught on in the West. We'll go through the kind of the post 20th century makeup trends. And I don't know like when the first white person to try threading was, but
probably in ancient times, but they were it was probably,
but they were immediately stoned
it was Marco
by
Polo.
The rest of the tribe. It was Marco Polo.
He was like, let me try that.
First of all, these egg rolls are delicious. Second of all, what are you doing with that piece of thread?
I do remember when I first started hearing about threading, and it was in the 90s, and I'm just ashamed that I didn't show more curiosity at the time. It was just one of a million things that people were talking about.
Well, the 90s were a pretty lousy eyebrow time, if you remember. Whew, we should talk about that in a minute. Like, don't take your eyebrow cues from Gwen Stefani.
So bad. Although I'll ride for Gwen all day, but those eyebrows, no.
Even today, I don't think she has those eyebrows. Even Gwen would not ride for those eyebrows today. Greece and Rome, on paper, they liked kind of an all natural look. Perictione, especially Greece. Perictione wrote that the harmonious woman does not blacken her eyebrows.
Oh, harmonious.
The idea that it's, you know, it's a natural look is more in tune with nature. And to some degree, we think of the stereotype of ancient Greek women having kind of a monobrow, a unibrow.
Uh-huh.
In fact, that's not exactly true. I think Anacreon and some other Greek writer, I'm not sure, when they write about the ideal eyebrows, they say that it's kind of a quasi-monobrow. What you want is the ideal of beauty for women is for their eyebrows to neither join nor sever.
Oh.
So they don't quite meet in the middle like Bert or Frida Kahlo.
Right.
But also they're not two separate arcs like pretty much every Chinese look
right.
from ancient times. They kind of blend into each other.
Yeah.
Slightly.
I get it.
And at the time, you know, because the natural look was so big in Greece and particularly in Rome, Ovid and Petronius both write about women keeping fake eyebrows in a little box like Mike Nichols, you know, and make goat hair, fake goat hair eyebrows and putting them on with some kind of tree sap or resin, to have the bushier look that was demanded at the fancy Saturnalia they were going to.
I'm feeling this goat hair attached with tree resin vibe.
You think you're going to start trying it?
Well, I don't know.
If you get really good at goat herding by virtue of self-domestication.
The thing is, nobody cares what I look like anymore.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm not making any public appearances, and I'm 53. Like, nobody's...
I mean,
like,
that's the main thing.
Dress it up a little.
You're a middle-aged man. Nobody's thinking... This guy needs to step it up a notch.
Although that may be when you really need to. I mean, for a decade, I didn't wear t-shirts at all. Now, these days, t-shirts and a sweatshirt, who cares, whatever.
If I ever see you with a t-shirt on a plane.
Oh, no, come on. I haven't gone that far.
I'm going to do a spit take with my Bloody Mary mix.
T-shirt on a plane with sandals that I take off? No.
You already mentioned the kind of stereotypical medieval European eyebrow look, which is... None.
Yeah, right. Like, the shaved.
They loved the forehead so much that like it was the standard of beauty.
Exactly.
Yeah. And I was trying to figure out why. Like why was a big naked forehead as good as you could get? And I see two different explanations, neither of which really make sense. I guess this one does. One is that we said that makeup is often an attempt to replicate or emphasize youth. So a shaved hairline is like going even further than that. And like, I just want to look like a big baby.
Yeesh.
Women would literally wear, you know, hoods or veils that would pull their hairline up. And if that didn't give them the broad expansive forehead that gentlemen crave, they would actually pluck their hairlines even further back.
Right.
And you know, they wanted that kind of pale, you know, they wanted to be all one color the way you and I have naturally. It's a shame that we are not 13th century England. Norman women. Yeah, exactly. Because they would even blanch the color palette further by putting wheat flour on their face to whiten it. They would put sheep urine in their hair.
Yeah.
Just because they're into that.
I do that.
Yeah, they're freaky like that.
I just want to say, looking at images of Gwen Stefani over the years, her eyebrow game is on point so often. She really has the blonde hair, dark eyebrow thing that that plants crave. And yeah, so anyway, you know, I could
we'll
not
say
possibly,
nothing bad about 90s eyebrows.
I could not possibly say anything bad about
it. Turns out you just love the female eyebrow in all its infinite variations.
In many of its variations.
You're so open-minded.
You know, I love Gwen Stefani. That's just, I'm not gonna lie.
The other explanation I read for why the blank forehead, the tabula rasa forehead, was so prized in medieval times is actually weirder. It's that it comes from times when men were focused on the breasts. Can you imagine such a weird time when the breasts would be the center of male attention?
You mean contemporary England?
And beauty standards. And as a result, the idea was you would dress and wear makeup in such a way that people wouldn't waste time looking at your face. It was literally my eyes are down there. This is like some reference scholarly reference work on beauty by a woman.
But Queen Elizabeth was wearing those enormous collars. Right. Her breasts were not.
This does not stand for. I wonder if this is more of a French centric theory.
Wait. That's more, sort of a Louis XIV era.
So it's literally my eyes are down here.
But
you know,
their faces were, you know, completely made up with
white,
the beauty
the big
mark
spots.
And, yeah.
Yeah. When you get into Victorian times, that's kind of the beginning of in Europe at least. That's kind of the first exploration of a bushier, natural look that you see today on plenty of stars. And I think part of it is a reaction to Victorian prudery. You know, like once again, it's like, well, you know, what kind of woman is coloring up her cheeks and carefully plucking her eyebrows. The wrong kind, if you know what I mean.
She should be wearing black crepe because she's older than 21.
Exactly. So if you're a respectable mother wearing black crepe at home and doing needlepoint, then you want kind of these thick, dark eyebrows. And in fact, the Victorians would darken their eyebrows. They would boil walnut bark in water to make kind of a dark tincture, or they would just take the water they'd been boiling potatoes in, which had like dark starch in it, and paint their eyebrows with that, you know, because, you know, to not have a big furry looking eyebrow was a little bit too sexy.
Huh.
They would even, some Victorian beauty guides say you should hold a needle over a candle flame until it gets a lot of kind of waxy soot on it, and then use that to draw in eyebrows, which is really not that different than what you would do today with microblading, or, you know, a little tiny kind of shallow. I mean, that's subcutaneous, but it's the same thing. Little tiny shallow lines to mimic individual hairs. And the Victorians were doing it at home with a candle.
Oh, I see.
Have you thought about microblading as a solution for your blank brow woes, your beige brow woes?
Maybe, you know, am I at the age where I should just start wearing a hat? I mean, I've always worn dark glasses frames. Mm. Partly to give myself some definition.
I'm really jealous of your bad eyes.
Yeah, I could set you up with some vanity glasses. Although I think you have too much integrity.
I always notice when people wear those, you know, because you see them at a slight angle and you're like, wait a second.
That's just plastic.
Those lenses aren't doing anything. Are there even lenses there? When we get up into the 20th century, the 1920s are kind of a watershed time for eyebrows. I mean, for two reasons. One, makeup is now getting mass produced, so it's no longer, you know, it's super convenient. You can buy stuff in smaller quantities. It's more inexpensive.
You don't have to hold a needle in a candle.
I mean, back, you know, literally.
Boil walnuts.
Just a few decades before, it was like you'd have to buy a tub of something, you know, or a roll of paper. You
right.
Know?
Walrus fat.
So little individual brushes and tubes, lipstick tubes, you know, this was all an early 20th century trend. So makeup's more available to people. And all the trends are now culture-wide because for the first time there's photography, you know,
right.
Instead of
magazines,
instead of reading a periodical that would have pen and ink engravings, you know, a woman would see black and white photographs of other beautiful women and would immediately, you know, cotton to the looks that really pop in black and white photography. So that meant dramatic eyebrow shapes that didn't rely on color or texture, because you want something that looks good in a in a magazine and in a movie. Like, these are the first movie stars with showy eyebrow looks.
Right. And pancake makeup. And
exactly.
And it's really necessary there because they really are emoting without,
sure,
without sound.
Like, you really need to be able to see eyebrows raised and lowered. And so you get the kind of the Clara Bow silent film look of really somebody plucking their brow bone entirely hairless and then kind of drawing on that kind of swooping arc.
Yeah.
And that kind of, that goes on through the 30s, Gene Harlow. You know, the rest of the Hollywood era is kind of a slippery slope of, you know, going from that, you know, early, I think like early Joan Crawford even has it drawn on, and she had some, you know, she had some all-time medal winning eyebrows. But, you know, you look at her silent movies and they're doing that needle thin.
Yeah. 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 Right.
I mean, this is the longest that two straight guys are ever going to talk about Joan Crawford's eyebrows on a podcast.
Yeah, maybe. But, maybe. I mean, I can keep going.
But the look gets more and more natural. You know, Rita Hayworth is a redhead. So, you know, she's got kind of, you know, eyebrows not too differently from our color, but bigger and bushier and fuller. And that continues through Lauren Bacall. And then Marilyn Monroe has thick, darker eyebrows than her platinum blonde hair. And you finally get up to the 60s and Audrey Hepburn has, you know, these eyebrows are just getting to be more and more eyebrowy.
Yeah.
As the decades go on. There's a couple momentary blips in this progress toward, I mean, I guess the end point might be the 80s with, we already mentioned Madonna, but like those kind of big, the Brooke Shields ideal.
Yeah.
The less cultivated eyebrow.
That may be where I got.
You think you're imprinted on?
I was deeply influenced by the big eyebrows. Because when the 90s came along and that return to silent movie eyebrows happened, boy, it was a shock.
There were a couple brief ones before. Like if you'll imagine the mid-60s, you've got Audrey Hepburn on the one hand, but you've also got that Twiggy look.
Yeah.
Where it's like, we're gonna react to everything about late 50s glamour. You know, these are not big Jane Mansfield curves in a sweater. This is straight line Twiggy, and she doesn't have the glamorous swooping Marilyn eyebrows. She's got these little throwback line ones. And it happened again during kind of coked up disco days. You know, if you can imagine like Diana Ross or somebody like that.
Okay. It, yeah. Yeah.
With a much kind of thinner eyebrow, maybe kind of going with the whole slightly androgynous, you know, David Bowie thing where.
Yeah. There was a 20s revival in the 70s.
That's true too.
That was kind of a, yeah, disco had a little bit of a flapper influence. Yeah. Liza Minnelli kind of thing.
And then you're talking about the 90s, where suddenly everybody was drawing on kind of weird shapes. Even people whose eyebrows, you know, Drew Barrymore, and we know perfectly well what your eyebrows look like, but suddenly she shows up in a movie with these odd 90s brows.
She went, Drew Barrymore was a real eyebrow thought leader. Yeah. In the 90s, her eyebrows were often really, really drawn on.
We should start retroactively using the word influencer.
Yeah, she was an influencer.
Marco Polo, huge influencer. Like, Europe didn't have noodles, and then hashtag pasta.
Rihanna, she had some real
thing. Rihanna's got some great eyebrow looks. I mean, that's kind of a, when you come up to the present, really bold, I think maybe because of threading and because of, you know, finally valuing a broader range of skin tones and facial types and hair textures, you now have really some bold eyebrow options. You know, the kind of the ideal today might be that big Kardashian eyebrow with the very highly defined lines, like almost too perfect to be real, but it is. It's great Armenian eyebrow hair. They're doing good work.
There's been such a splintering of fashion into a billion little Balkan fashion zones that I wonder if the whole idea of there being a fashion is a thing we're just kind of clinging to because that's the only way, you know, right. Like, what is the fashion? I mean,
because fashion magazines need there to be a fashion.
Right.
And they needed to change every 6 months.
And so, yeah, you look at who's got the most Instagram followers. I guess that's the fashion. But of course, you can do anything now. You can wear whatever you want at all times, and you're immediately a member of a subculture. All it takes is five people in the world to stick a pencil up their nose, and it's a subculture.
It does seem like a lot of these fashion shows end with, and today, anything goes, yeah. Who knows?
Right.
And it might actually be right, just as you say, because of the splintering of the monoculture.
Yeah, although I have no idea why that normcore thing lasted as long as it did, but I guess it's just anti-fashion.
Laziness. Same reason I do it. So basically, any eyebrow look works today. We're even yours and mine.
Yeah. Well, no, I think ours still don't work.
Why are we once again taking it on the chin?
We're the last people that aren't doing something to their eyebrows.
Beige
you and I.
Men.
Because of laziness and lack of comprehension, and also no one cares what we look like. And that concludes Eyebrows, entry 446.IS4804, certificate number 22352 in the omnibus. Futurelings, in the unlikely event that social media still exists in your era, you will probably be listening to this show and referencing all of the future Instagram accounts of eyebrow influencers your own time.
They're probably grossed out that like the dominant species on Earth used to have little sprouts of hair certain places.
Or that we only had two eyes.
Yeah, exactly.
They probably have 40 eyes.
Imagine whatever tentacle spots or, lichen patches you use to signal emotional state or sexual availability.
Right. It's some kind of phytoplankton. You know, they're photosynthesizing and they're like, no, I'm...
Every time we say eyebrows, you think glowing patches of phytoplankton.
When I say eyebrows, you say glowing patches of phytoplankton.
On my carapace. And then everything here will make sense. Even all the Gwen Stefani talk.
I bet when beings have like eight eyes, it will at some point be a fashion to put different colored contacts in each eye so that you have 16 different colors of light sensor, photoreceptor.
Wow.
That'll be such a cool look.
Imagine a squid doing it today on that big eye. Just one giant, like, purple contact.
Whoa.
Pretty good look, right?
That's a good look. If they were out walking around. You can see Ken's and my... bad coloration on the internet. You can email us or text us at Omnibus Project on social media. I guess you don't email or text on social media. Whatever it is, comment, at reply.
Even if your screen has only two or three colors, we actually look like that.
So at Ken Jennings, at John Roderick. Email us at theomnibusproject@gmail.com and explain to us how wrong we are.
About eyebrows.
You can hang out with other futurelings and share your eyebrow experience, strength, and hope at any futurelings group on Facebook and Reddit and the other places, TikTok. You can send us mail at P.O. Box 55744, Shoreline, Washington 98155. If you want to send us eye makeup, please have it be unused and... You know, bear in mind that you're compensating for our complete lack of pigmentation. So it can't be a crate. You can't send us like red eyeshadow.
Keep in mind that even though John and I are the same color, somehow I'm a spring and he's an autumn.
Yeah, it's very strange. We are very, very ash, but you have more pink.
Actually, I don't know. I don't remember how those work.
Yeah.
The color me beautiful term.
I'm not really at autumn. I can't wear orange. I don't know what I am. I'm a man.
I'm a Gemini.
55744 Shoreline, Washington, 98155. And you can support the program at patreon.com/omnibusproject. Your contributions help us produce and distribute this show, and we appreciate your support. So thank you.
Listeners, from our vantage point here in your distant past, we have no idea how long our civilization and its fresh and sexy eyebrow looks survived. We hope and pray that the catastrophe we fear may never come. If the worst comes soon, this recording, like all our recordings, may be our final word. But if Providence allows, We hope to be back with you soon for another entry in the Omnibus.